on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 88-year-old Bill Schrader of Prescott, Arizona, originally from Los Angeles, California. In a while, we'll hear from his daughter, Susan Howe, founder of Honor Flight Arizona. When we left off, Bill mentioned that while he was in the Pacific as a nose gunner on B-24s during World War II, he bought a monkey. Bill, we've got to hear the rest of that story.
My armor gunner, he was a camera nut, and he took pictures of everything we did when we were in the air, and he would leave the film rolls on top of his mosquito net. We'd leave the monkey tied up to the bedpost, and off we'd go for 14 hours. When we came back, the monkey had taken every film and pulled it all out.
Well, the monkey was a camera nut, too, apparently.
But it was so sad because all those good films were destroyed.
Somewhere there were some outstanding pictures from the end of World War II that never saw the light of day, thanks to that monkey.
And then when I brought the monkey back home, we had to take and get it inoculated over there when we came back home to the States.
Wait a second. You brought a monkey home to the States?
Yes.
Yeah. I've talked to a lot of guys who had monkeys and crazy pets in the war, but no one who ever brought it home to the States.
I brought it home, but that darn monkey hated women. And when we were on a base in Sacramento, after we turned over the plane, we were getting ready to go home, the monkey would chase women. It hated white women. To chase them all over. But when I bought it home, my mother, who loved animals, she thought she could train it, but you cannot train a monkey from doing whatever it wants to do. And this monkey destroyed everything in sight. It would poop all over the walls. It's awful.
Did the monkey have a name?
Mary. What else would you call a monkey?
Well, I could think of a few that, you know. Wow.
Well, I don't want to tell you what my armorer called it.
Might not be fit to air on the
radio.
No.
He was so mad.
You know, I always say that on this show we're educated, and we certainly have been today, about the habits of monkeys from, you found that on Samar? Is that where you got it?
Yeah, Samar, right.
Uh-huh. All right.
Yeah.
What ultimately became of that primate?
Well, it destroyed the power on one block by going up on the telephone pole. How it did it without getting electrocuted, I'll never know.
Are you sure this monkey wasn't named Curious George? Because it sounds kind of familiar.
But it was just destroying too much. And my mother thought she was going to train it, but she couldn't. So I finally gave it to some pet shop because they wouldn't buy it. So I gave it to somebody just to get rid of it.
And this was in L.A.?
This was Los Angeles, right.
Who knows? Maybe we ended up seeing that monkey in the movies somewhere. You know?
I think he just became governor.
I guess here in Arizona, you can get away with saying that. You know, this is this time of year, everyone's celebrating Thanksgiving. Everyone just finished off that turkey and stuffing, and maybe is still suffering from the effects of tryptophan. But you actually experienced a Thanksgiving in the service?
When we landed in the United States, we landed a day or two before Thanksgiving, which I can't remember. But we reserved our Thanksgiving dinner by German prisoners of war in Sacramento, California.
How about that?
Yeah. They had a better life here than they did when they were in their own army.
I'm sure. I'm sure a lot of them were very thankful to be alive and be here. But that had to be a little surreal for you.
Well, it was, yeah. It was really interesting.
Did you interact with them much or you just observed?
Well, you couldn't talk to them. We didn't speak German and they didn't speak English. But they were very friendly. You know, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm. Another kind of milestone moment, I suppose, or one of those days that a lot of the veterans I've talked to seem to have some specific memory about if they were in the Pacific in August of 1945, is how they found out that the war had come to an end, that Japan had surrendered. How was it that you got that news?
Apparently our commanders told us that the war was over.
What did that mean to you to know that this is over, that all these millions of Americans have been overseas and all those millions more back home supporting them, and now that it's finally over?
It meant we were going home rather than to Okinawa, which was a great thought. In fact, well, when I finally got back into Los Angeles, I was walking down the street to get a streetcar to go home when I went by a sign that said, "We need you." And this was the Navy Air Force looking for pilots to train. And I said, "Oh, boy, maybe I can fly now." And I had all my records with me, so I went in there. I said, I want to fly still. And they said, "Well, good, let's look." So they looked at all my records. They said, "Good, you're in." I said, "Oh, great." He says, "When are you ready to go?" I says, "Well, I don't know yet." They said, "Well, we have a class starting Monday." This was Friday. Mm-hmm. He says, "You got to be down here at a certain time." And I said, "Oh, no, wait a minute. That's too soon." So I didn't go back in.
So you missed the opportunity.
Yeah, to fly. But in a way, I'm thankful because too much was following that. Korea,
yeah,
Vietnam. So thank for goodness.
Yeah, you might have been flying off one of those aircraft carriers in Korea.
Right, yeah.
Most people listening have never been on a B-24. Maybe they've heard some people talking about it. Maybe they recognize its distinct profile. They've heard some of the not always flattering nicknames for it. What did you like about the B-24? What did you think were the strengths of that plane?
It could fly further than anything else other than the B-29, which was just coming in. We had a bigger bomb load. To us, it was our plane. You know, we didn't think the B-17 was so good anymore.
I've caught wind of that rivalry that exists between B-17 crew members and B-24.
Basically the 8th Air Force.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I just got to tell you something. Last year, uh-huh, my daughter got us a ride on a B-24.
Last year in Phoenix. And when was the last time you'd been on a B-24?
1945.
All right. So nearly 70 years later, you get back in a B-24.
Right.
Did you get to sit in the same spot?
Oh, gosh, no. It was all they were working on it. In fact, we didn't think we were going to take off because it had some mechanical problems. So we came back before we took off, and they fixed it. I hate to tell you how they fixed it. But no, and she got to see the B-24 take off and fly around Phoenix.
What did that feel like to be up in one of those Liberators all those years later?
It's a lot different than today's commercial airlines. No padding, no nothing.
Well, that was my question. So on your missions, you'd be right there in the nose of that B-24, and you've got the Bombardier down there in the nose too, right?
Yeah, right behind me. And CI is still leading.
You're still in front. You still had the lead, which I don't know if that's the smartest place to be. I mean, aren't you going to get hit first if someone's shooting something at your nose?
I guess. There's the turret.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's me inside it.
That's you inside the turret. And I'll put a picture of that on hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. How cramped is that position? What does it feel like to be sitting there?
Because it's 6'2". There's no more room.
And of those 14 hours on some of those missions, how much time do you think you'd have to spend in that spot?
Probably not more than a couple hours because it took you that long to get to where you were going.
What do you do for the rest of that time? If you're only 2 hours up there in that
You get a great meal on board.
Flight attendants were nice?
They are beautiful. You get a can of peaches, a gallon of peaches, a loaf of white bread, and Spam.
Naturally.
A tin of Spam. That was your meal.
Uh-huh.
For 14 hours.
For 14 hours. But when you come back,
you get some Spam in the dent. We were in the jungle, so you didn't get. The Navy had the best food. You know, they had electricity on board where they were, so.
How about interactions with the native inhabitants of the spots where you were?
Well, you talk to them, and, like, I bought my monkey from one of them.
Were they laughing when you walked away with the monkey?
I don't remember.
They knew what that monkey was made out of, I'm wondering?
Lucky they didn't eat it.
I get the sense, just looking at your wall here, and I see the patch from the 13th Air Force, and from the 23rd Bomb Squadron. I see a photo of your entire squadron.
That was the day after V-Day, yeah.
Well, that seems pretty eventful. You guys all lined up around a B-24, and I didn't know a B-24 wing could sustain all that weight.
Neither did I, but we had our whole outfit on it.
So half the squadron is sitting and standing below the wings of the B-24. The rest of it is sitting and standing on the wings
on
of
the
B-24.
Wings, yeah.
That must have been kind of fun to pose for that picture.
Yeah, it was. You know, I don't remember much of it now, but yeah.
And we'll have to put that on online too at hometownheroesradio.com. Anyway, I get the sense just looking at your wall and seeing those photographs, those patches, those maps of where you were, that you're proud of your service in World War II.
Oh, yes.
Is there a moral to the story or a message there that we could learn from today? Was there something different about America 70 years ago that maybe you think we should get back to?
Our country was certainly together. Everybody wanted to do something. Today, oh, I can't say what I want to say, but things are so different. It scares me what's happening to our country.
Well, I'm pretty sure that your kids and grandkids are pretty glad that you made it back from the war.
I guess they'd have to be.
They wouldn't be if here otherwise.
They wouldn't be here.
One of the other things in talking to guys who flew in the Pacific, you know, some of them, sure, they faced ground fire and they faced air-to-air combat. In your case, you were fortunate not to experience that, but some of them also say that the weather sometimes could be as big of an enemy as the Japanese. Did you ever have to fly in some questionable weather conditions?
We took off in a typhoon, and as we went down the runway, we were just doing this back and forth. Then I guess I was concerned. Yes. Now that I'm thinking about it, yeah. Because we were scared because we were fully loaded bombs. And you don't want to crash with those.
No.
But we got off the ground, and once you get above it, it's fine. That storm put big naval ships up on shore. It just picked them up and put them up there. So that was probably the scariest flight we ever had. Or although leaving before we went over there, now that I remember, gasoline was pouring all over the side of our plane across our window. And I called a pilot and I said, there's gasoline just all over this thing. We were right over the San Francisco Bay before we left. And he said, keep your eye on it. But he said, get your chutes on and open the hatch. Get ready to go out. And we're looking down at the San Francisco Bay and it was dark and it's cold because it's always cold up there.
Yeah.
And what it is, they overloaded our tanks too much with gas, and it was spilling out. But for about an hour, we circled, and it cleared up. So then we went on.
You know, you're talking about taking off in that typhoon and the plane kind of swinging back and forth in that storm. In that situation, where do you go mentally? I mean, are you just saying, boy, I really trust this pilot. I know he's good. It's going to be fine. Are you saying a little prayer? I mean, what do you do in a situation like that?
You know, I can't remember, but I'm sure I said a prayer.
Well, if there's anything else that comes to mind that you think I should know about with regard to World War II specifically, let me know. I want to say thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling me about it. And I want to ask you, too, about what your daughter's been up to the last few years, because something tells me that you might have a little pride in...
She's a sweetheart.
Tell me what she did 6 years ago with Honor Flight.
She came up to where we lived in California and got some training there and finally found out more about Honor Flights. She took on a monstrous thing and came back, and she called me up one time and she said, you want to go back to Ohio? I said, well, yeah. What for? Well, she said, I'm going back to learn some more about Honor Flights, and you'll be my first veteran. And so we went back, and when we landed there was a storm going on in Washington, so they canceled it all. But but they took us back anyway, so it was just my daughter and myself, and we got the full trip of the monument.
What did that mean to you, to see the World War II Memorial, to see all those gold stars, and to see something that was built really by your generation, for your generation?
It irritated me that it took so long for World War II to be built after everybody else's. That's about all I could say. And I don't understand why.
Well, because it was you guys who had to pony up the bucks for it. I mean, it was mostly World War II veterans who came up with the nearly $200 million to build that memorial. So I guess that's what they were waiting for.
Oh.
But I guess the question is, was it worth the wait? What did you get out of that experience of being there? What kinds of things maybe came to mind while you were there?
Well, you never saw 70 and 80-year-old men all with tears in their eye. It was something. It was beautiful.
Did you lose any friends in the war?
Not In our immediate, no. High school kids, but you know, we weren't real close or friends.
When you got back from the war, you talked about the Navy opportunity you had, but that was going to be too soon. So what did you end up doing? Did you ever have an occasion to use some of the things you had picked up in the Air Corps to your advantage?
I went to college for a year and a half, and I said, this is not for me. But I also joined the California Air National Guard. Then I was my job transferred me to the Bay Area, but they didn't have an Air National Guard place nearby, so I got out. And within that year, that's when we went into the Korean thing. And so I lucked out again.
Yeah. Kind of sounds like somebody was looking out for you along the way.
Oh, heck yes. The Lord taking great care of me.
Not going to argue with that. And when we come back, we'll hear from Bill's daughter. What makes her so proud of her dad and what she's done to make a giant difference in the lives of over 1,000 World War II veterans. Hometown Heroes comes down the home stretch right after this.